Now we're going to have an overview of IPD by Dr. Lulia.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I know this is a very sensitive topic, but we also have to come up with as much energy as we have, because that's how we're going to address the issue. So I'm going to take some time to talk to us about engaging men in preventing intimate partner violence, why this is important for us to do, and some of the resources that are out there for us to use. As we discuss, we'll find out some more. So I first want to start with what you data say that are women. You know, this is different, and I'm going to explain in a few minutes why I'm coming to you in a different way. But what does the data say to us about women and violence? It says to us 3 in 10 women have experienced domestic violence or are experiencing domestic violence. In 2010, and I don't know why we don't have updated stats, I was checking for that, but 39% of homicides for women were by an intimate partner. So sometimes strangers go and do things, but 39% by an intimate partner. And women are more likely than men to experience multiple forms of violence. Women are also, minorities are also disproportionately affected. Sometimes we have this debate about, oh, you're talking about women victims, but they are men victims, yes. But you can see the discrepancy. Whereas we say 3 in 10 women, we say 1 in 10 men. And look at the intimate partner violence. It's 3% for men, but 39% for women. Bringing it closer home here in Howard County, we had a memorial service, Maryland. In January, we usually have the annual memorial service by the Maryland Network Against Domestic Violence. And in Maryland, we lost 42 people from July 2014 to June 2015. So on that side, it tells us the victims that we lost, either victims themselves or innocent people, children or passers-by. But guess what? Even the abusers died. And this is part of why this is a main problem, because you can't say, okay, I'm the abuser, I have the authority, I'm the pressing oppressor. Because it gets to a point that you get so sucked in with the violence that even your life doesn't mean anything to you. Some of these were mother suicides, and that's what happened. So what is this domestic violence that we talk about? I decided to start with the people who killed at the numbers because I had an experience sometime last month. And it was something that happened in Nigeria, but we know the world is a global village, so something happens somewhere else doesn't mean that it's not happening in some other place. And what had happened was some lady had been killed by her husband, and the news was a domestic violence case that people were talking about. And then, like 3 weeks after the coroner's report came out, and it said she died from, I think, respiratory failure or something, and some people got on social media and said, where are the people who are saying she was killed by domestic violence? See, she wasn't killed by domestic violence. No, that domestic violence is not on a death certificate doesn't mean that a person wasn't killed by domestic violence. Because domestic violence is a term that we use, but it connotes so many things other than the final death. Just 2 days ago, I was reading about somebody who said, her daughter committed suicide because of domestic violence. So even when the partner is not there, it actually can be the effect of domestic violence. So domestic violence, a lot of times people focus on the physical violence. Do you have bruises? Do you have police reports? But that's not all there is to domestic violence. Domestic violence also includes sexual violence. That you're in a relationship, that you're married, doesn't mean that your partner has to be ready every time. They have a right to say no. And compelling them to engage in sex, even in your relationship, is actually a form of violence. We've added stalking. Before, this used to be threats of psychological and physical abuse, but we've added stalking, especially in the age of social media. People stalk people on social media, and it's so bad that we've actually seen people, I'm sure, I don't know how many people read about the person who killed the wife and put the body on Facebook a couple of weeks ago. And family members were waking up to see this body on Facebook. They're stalking people physically, they're stalking people on social media. Psychological aggression. That is one thing that people fail to associate closely with domestic violence. They're like, but he wasn't there, so why didn't you leave? You are so petrified by this person that even in their absence, you are immobilized. The person isn't that you can move and you can go, but the person has looked at you and has told you that I'm going out. I want you to remain in this room. Not don't leave the house, it's this room. Don't even leave this room. And you'll be surprised that you come back and a person is still positioned in that same sport. How does that happen? It's a form of domestic violence. And that's what we're talking about. This is the power and control wheel. I like to talk about the power and control wheel because people sometimes say, oh, it's because he's drinking, you know, it's because he lost his job, it's because of one thing or the other. Domestic violence is only about one thing, power and control. If it's because he's drinking, you find the person goes to work, is able to function perfectly well at work, but when it comes to this one person, they have issues, that's not because they're drinking. You find that abusers are perfect in Winnebago Church. So the victim comes and the victim is trying to tell somebody that this person is abusing me. And they're looking at you like, have you lost your mind? We see him, he's the deacon, he's the reverend, he's the church leader, he's the council person, he's the chief executive officer. No, it's just about power control. So the person can be perfectly fine outside, but the person needs to be in control of this one individual and his power and control. They use intimidation. Where are you going to? Who told you you can go? Why did you go? Why did you call your mom? It's your mom, yes, but we're married now. We're in a relationship now. Why did you call your mom? They use emotional abuse. Like, oh, you don't really love me. If you really love me, you wouldn't do that. And then you find out that she's okay, I love you. You can have my right eye. Your right eye, that's all I get. How much you love me, that's all I get, your right eye. Like, okay, yeah, have my left eye also. Oh, your left eye, what happened to your hand? Okay, have my hand also. Oh, just your hands, can I have your legs too? You cannot, and this is one of the things what we tell churches, you cannot get out of domestic violence situation by just talking to people. Because the person, the abuser needs to be in control of the other person. And the goalpost keeps shifting. Today says, oh, it's because you're working. Oh, I'm not working anymore. Then tomorrow it becomes, oh, you're spending too much time at home. Oh, the next week is because you're spending too much time on the computer. There's always something you're doing wrong. And that's because the abuser needs to make you feel like you owe your existence to them. If they don't make you feel that you owe your existence to them, we're not able to move forward. So this is the power and control wheel that we use. But I want to talk about the top 10 reasons for working with men and boys. And this is where you know that I need my classes to stay. So the top 10 reasons for working with men and boys. It says, gender-based violence continues to be a problem in communities across the United States and around the world until everyone recognizes their responsibility to end violence. The health and risk of women and girls will continue to be at risk. Does anybody have any questions, concerns about that statement? You see, we get caught up in the fact that, oh, there's men and there's women and everybody. But when we look at the structure, everybody has a role to play. And that's basically what we're saying. You can't leave it to the woman to say, okay, go and end this problem. Even though we have same-sex violence, we have women and women violence and men violence, it's just a societal problem. Not just in the US, but globally, it's a societal problem. And everybody has to come up to the table. Gender violence needs to be approached as a men's issue. Overwhelmingly, it is men who hurt women. It is through work with men and boys that we can end violence against women. And we'll see it as this goes on. Because there are some men. I think last year, when we were having this, Carl was like, he sent this email that he was moderating the session to his friends. And how much response did you get back from them? Almost no response. You know, you send people, sorry, Rick, I was looking at Rick, and I was saying, you know, almost no response. You tell people that this is what is going on. But it is the men who hurt the women. And unless we get the men to the table, this is our third year of doing it. And this is basically how we get it. We get more women in the room than men, you know, and we're trying everything to get men to the table because this is something that we cannot do without the men. So women want and need male allies to join them in their stand against violence. And why is this important? People like to turn this to a gender equality issue, and it is not. It is a social justice issue. It's a societal issue. I like to pitch the women against the men. But there's no right or wrong way. There's no two people can do it. And this is interesting. Most men respect women and do not agree with violence against women. How many men respect women here? And that is it. We see that a lot of men really respect women. A lot of men really do not subscribe to violence against women. But you cannot be content with the fact that I'm never going to hit my wife. I'm never going to hit my sister. I'm never going to be abusive. And if that person wants to be abusive, and that's their business, no. That's your business also. That's your business also is affecting the society in which you live. It's affecting the values that come into society. Your child is going to go to school with somebody who's living in an abusive home. The way they behave is somehow going to manifest on that child. And you're waking up and you're going to say, that's not what we do in this house. Well, unless you're planning to homeschool your child, to have your religious services in your home, society is bound to have an influence. And we have to be concerned with the things that are happening to other people. It says the effort of men already working to stop violence will be strengthened with new male allies at their side. Many men want to join the movement but they don't have. So people are like, oh, some people are already doing it. I'm happy about that. But we need more people, particularly we need more men. Very important that we need more men because we need to move away from the notion that this is about women. And sometimes men don't want to hear us say, men are not born violent. Can I get an amen for that? Men are really not born violent. Nobody's born violent. We see all of these pictures that we say, oh, children are not born racist. Men are not born violent. But really what happens is that some become violent as a result of destructive beliefs and expectations about what it means to be a man. You go to school and it's like, this is a young man, and you go and you see your friends are like pushing their girlfriends around. And you think, yeah, I want to be cool too, you know? I don't want to be the one everybody thinks that I'm the funny person. So you think the cool thing to do, you know, is to be able to say, yeah, I pushed you around too, you know, like, I'm the man. That's what we teach them in some places. You might say that's not what you teach them at home, but if they're getting it from somewhere, it's not helping us as a society at large. Men care. This is not an ambitious declaration. This is the truth. Men can stop violence. They really can. They can choose not to perpetrate acts of violence. More importantly, they can challenge those men who do. They can challenge men who do. Men can also challenge, and this is an attitude which supports violence against women. This idea that, oh, well, is your bone broken? And he was just drunk? And the way to make sure that we're getting, so to say, bang for our bucks, is not to leave it to a section of society to fight it. Because really, when you leave it to a section of society to fight it, then it's like it's really not a big problem. If it was a big problem, everybody would be on top of this game. But if it's only them over there that are fighting this issue, how much of a problem can it really be? You know. But we really all need to come together. I had this one dance because I know that this is an issue for a lot of people. Sometimes you come and you talk about stuff. I went to a domestic violence organization that served predominantly women in their shelter. They have they had a program that went into schools to serve students. They had a hospital-based program that served victims who came into the hospital could be male or female. But in the shelter where I had the most interactions, the domestic violence people were women. So if I'm telling you stories about victims, I probably have more stories of women to tell. And once you start to tell a story about the domestic violence victim and you're telling a woman's story, like men also suffer domestic violence. It does not mean when a person tells a story about the female survivor, absolutely does not preclude the fact that men are also victims. So we know that and we recognize that and we know that men are also victims. But the important thing though is that when we come together, it really doesn't matter who's the victim. When we have a society that violence is not condoned, there will be no victim. Male or female, there just will be no victim. And that's what we're looking forward to. So as we press on towards that, you said men and boys listen to their peers. You can imagine, I'm sure it's because you're here, that's why you're listening to me. You know, but regularly, I tried to talk to some guys, and they just looked at me like seriously? Like, you're going to go there with me? Like, you know, how did that occur to you? I'm the dude, I know what to do with my brain. You know, and I really, at that point, I have to back off because I don't know what else to say. But you are a guy, you're talking to a guy, you're guy trying to be smart with you. You know where he's coming from, you know where he's going to. You think like him, you know, you can look him square in the eye and say to him, like, I was there last year. I felt the same thing too last year. I've come along this far, and this is why I. You know what to say. There's a limit to what a woman can say in terms of engaging men. And that's why we say that we need our male partners at the table. And last but not the least, many men hold positions of power. We have a judge here. We have a councilman who just left. And this is really, we need policies to change. We need funding to do this work. And the way we're going to move forward is when we have this men of power come and use their position of influence. And we're not, you know, we're not, this is not an equality thing. If you have the power, you have the power. You know, we're not going to say you don't have the power. You have the power. We need to make our society, the bottom line is we need to make our society safe. Safer. We need to make our families safer. We need to make people healthier. And so we'll bring everybody on board. Now, all of these 10 reasons I've given is from the Office of Women's Affairs. And if you go to their website now, this is what they say about engaging men and youth. They're providing 6.9 million in awards to 23 projects. And of particular interest for me was that this is the first time in the history of the Office of Women Affairs that a grant program directly encourages men to be part of successful crime prevention efforts addressing violence against women and partners in creating respectful and positive relationships. Because we've gone it on our own for a very long time, we really have. And giving all the efforts that we have put and the results that we have to show for it, there's just no going away from the fact that we need more partners at the table. And we just don't need more partners at the table. We need our men partners at the table. And some people are taking this seriously. So let's look at some of the people who are taking this seriously. The men's nonviolent project. This is the good thing about public health, and that's my background, is that we come to things from a public perspective. So this was a project in Texas, but it's a project that can be used nationally. And I have to come here because I don't know what happened to this connection. But okay, we did use that. Anyway. Yeah, we went forward. But that's a resource that we had. This is a society out there that are engaging men in violence. And one of the things I like about this It tells you about 10 things men can do to engage your community. So wherever you are, you can solicit. Information is key. People don't know what's happening and people don't do anything. You can solicit. You can call on your local school board to host the assembly. You can be an advocate. There's nothing, believe you me, there's nothing more powerful than seeing someone saying that. It's not cool to hit a woman. A woman comes and tells me it's not cool to hit, I'm like, what else are you going to say? Isn't it in your interest? Of course you don't want somebody hitting you. You're going to say it's not cool. But to see a man who has the power and who says that, even though I have the power, strength-wise, height-wise, even though I have the financial resources to oppress this person, I make a conscious decision not to do that because I think that we have a lot more to give. It doesn't change anything. If you're 6 feet tall and you hit somebody, by the time you finish beating the person, you still be only 6 feet tall. It's not going to make you taller. It's not. It's not going to make you, if you were not good looking before you did it, you'd still be not good looking after it's done. It's not going to change anything. You still just have as much money as you had in your bank account before. Nothing really changes. So the person is afraid of you. So the person cowers when you come into the room. How does that make you a better person? How does that help you as a person? How does that help the society that you live in? It doesn't change anything. So we wanted to share with you this, the 10 things, and I can share that resource with you. You can obtain and distribute information, go out and obtain and distribute, and don't be shy. You're saving a life. You might not look at it like that, but think about it like that. Because it's not until somebody dies that their life is lost. And somebody living in fear, somebody living below their potential, that's really not the life that they could be living. And the fact that you say something, you can save somebody's life. You can make somebody be who they want to be. They've been stifled by fear, but you move them out of that fear. You tell them, go and take these resources, stand tall. You have your whole life ahead of you. Nobody has the right to take that from you. Not even under the guise of loving you more than anybody else in the world. And so you can host an annual event, you can advocate, you can take information, you can share it. There's so much you can do by engaging men. And then we go back, and we have another resources. Now this curriculum for engaging men. And what I like about this one, it tells you the examples of people that you want to engage in. You know, people like, okay, well, George, this is your tough. I didn't go to law school. I don't know how to speak before an audience. I'm just going to sit back and everybody has a role to play. Everybody has a role to play. Whether you're a politician, whether you're a business owner, whether you're a board member, your counselor, your society, everybody, wherever you are, you have a role to, as long as you don't live in isolation. And how many people here live in isolation? I didn't think so. As long as you don't live in isolation, you have a role to play. And you must play your role. Whether we ask you or not, but fortunately enough, we are asking you. So you don't get that excuse of you didn't know. And you take the knowledge, we're going to end with the fact that you take the knowledge and you're going to do something with the knowledge that you've taken. And why I like this site that I decided to share this site is these guys aren't playing. These people are absolutely not playing about engaging men. They have an event, August, June, May. It's like we just said, we have an annual event in Maryland, engaging the faith community, and up until now, we just had to see the fence, like Calvin Bao said, the Just Howard County Healthcare. This is one community, this is one organization that's put out of that. Because we have daughters training, men are work training, community-based solutions preventing violence against women. We need to wake up. We really do. We can put this together. If now the donors, you can come and get this event and let them know you want to use it. And even if you find out, you probably can do something in your church, in your office. It's just nobody thinks it's important. That's why it's not happening. Or nobody thinks it has anything to do with me. But you don't have something to do with you. The basis of all of this intervention, for me as a public health practitioner, is about Bandura's social knowledge theory. And this is what Bandura says, and this is what I say to you today. Who you are as a person, what you know as a person, influences how you behave. So you come here today, and we have said to you that domestic violence is a real problem. But domestic violence is a preventable problem. We expect that with the personal knowledge that you have, identifying that this is a problem that you can do something about, your behavior changes. And you begin to say, okay, I'm going to behave differently. I'm not going to look the other way when next I see something happening. I'm going to talk to my friend who I'm concerned about how he's treating his wife, his girlfriend. Your behavior changes if you say, okay, I'm going to find out in my church, in my place of work, do we have a domestic violence policy? Can I talk to the human resources manager? Is there something that we should be doing? They want somebody to start it. Okay, I'll volunteer to sit on the committee. I volunteer to get people together. And guess what? When our behavior changes, we begin to change the environment that we live in. Because we know all these things, we get information out there. You know, and the guy wants to abuse his partner. The girl wants to abuse her partner. And she thinks and she says, but I did hear that this is not acceptable behavior. I know, yes, that I make more money than him. I know, yes, that he's in this country and I vote for him and he's dependent on me to get his visa. I know I'm in some place of authority over him, but that doesn't justify me to make him less than the man that he is, less than the man that he should be. And we create an environment, and that's the thing, the way this theory works in public health is really, you know, if you go somewhere, when I was working in my office, they had this rule, they're trying to get people to stop smoking, and they had all the smoking program, and then the next thing you knew, they took away the smoking time, you had to go downstairs to go and smoke, and then after a while you couldn't go downstairs to smoke, you had to go around the block to go and smoke. It's easy to go downstairs if there are five of you going downstairs to go and smoke, you know, you're like, let's go guys, let's go, you know. But then you come out there and you're like, let's go, like, I quit smoking. Let's go, like, I quit smoking. Let's go, like, I quit, like, seriously, you guys are all going to quit smoking? At first you're mad because, like, I have to go downstairs myself, you know. But then as you go downstairs, they want, and you begin to think, like, wow, five of us, nobody's going downstairs anymore. Maybe I should think about quitting smoking, too. And so this is how we create the environment. He's beating his wife. His wife isn't working. She doesn't have any money. She comes to him every time, you know, she wants to buy toothpaste. He's like, can I have money to go to the store? We need to... And you're like, your wife doesn't have $10 to any chance at you. Like, yeah, I'm the boss here. I control the resources. Yes, I need to know what the money is for. My wife has an account. She does? Yeah. She can do what she wants with her money. She can? Yeah. Nobody is going to change in isolation. Now we like to say, and we do say that individuals are responsible for their behavior. But we also acknowledge the fact that your environment can influence how you behave. And this is what we say. We need to be able to, as individuals, take the knowledge that we have, modify individual behaviors, go and challenge people, educate people, strengthen the systems that we have, say to our elected officials, we need policies to change, say to our government officials, we need funding to make these programs happen, say to ourselves, okay, I'm going to print this pamphlet myself and I'm just going to go and distribute that. Do all of these behaviors, get the knowledge out, and we're going to get the end results that we're looking for. Why do we want violence to end? Why do we want violence to end? Aside from the medical expenses of the people who, okay, I admit I'm a crybaby, okay? I'm just going to like cry like for hours on end when I see something bad happen. But you can't tell me not to cry when I read in the paper that somebody picked up his wife and two children and drove into a lab on his bed. It's over. It's over. Their lives don't have to end. You can't I don't know them. I would never know them. But how do you comprehend that somebody thought it possible and then went to execute killing the spouse and the children? When you know somebody that is divorced and has survived for 20 years, I mean, so you know that separation is not the end of the world. You really know it. And so we need to get a society to move away from the place where life has to end in balance. We have people, I don't know if you know them, but I do know people that you see them, you think that they have a multiple person disorder. It's not, it's fear. Because when they're around their spouse, you can hardly look up. And like, but I was with her yesterday. She was all bubbly and everything. Spouse wasn't there. Okay? I was with him. I know he can talk. Why is he sitting down there all quiet? Because he doesn't want to get ridiculed in front of everybody. So he knows it's in the best interest to pretend that he can't talk. But that's not who he is. And so we're letting people be wounded, we're letting people live beyond their potential. In short, we are shortchanging ourselves as a society. And that has to end. And the only way to end it is for all of us, every last single one of us, to identify our place, and to take the necessary steps to fulfill our responsibilities in ending intimate partner violence. Thank you very much. Oh, this is supposed to be questions. Does anybody have any questions, questions, comments, thoughts? Yes.
Dr. Lillian, first of all, very powerful presentation. I just want to know a little bit more about your background. The passion that you bring to this, is that as a result of your being involved in domestic violence, or is this just from your studies and your passion as a woman?
Some of it is from my studies, and some of it is from my personal experience. So I was in an abusive marriage, and when my abuse started, and this is some of the things that we talk about, educating people about domestic violence. Because even up until last year, one of my friends still laughed at me when I said, you know, I said, it's like, don't say, I'm like, what? It's like, nobody's ever going to believe you. It's like HIV AIDS. Domestic violence is no respect of person. It's no respect of color, it's no respect of education, it's no respect of background. You get there because you think, there's nobody who thinks that this is what I'm getting to and says, somebody to terrorize me, video. Sounds like a brilliant idea. Let me sign the line and go down the way. That's not how it happens, you know. So I got into this relationship, I got married, and if I could blink my eye, I'm like, okay, this is interesting, you know. And I was too stunned to react to it because I'm like, I'm totally fascinated by this. I mean, not like fascinated, like, I'm like, people behave like, I didn't know anybody who would think this about another person or talk about their partner either. So I'm like, seriously? And then I finally have enough nerve to leave. And then my family is like, it's not happening. the head of my family is a professor, teaches at New York City. I'm like, what do you mean it's not happening? My pastor's like, it's not happening. I'm looking at them like, I don't understand what you guys mean that it's not happening. Like, you can't leave. I'm like, I can't leave. Like, have you thought about this? Have you tried? I'm like, you guys know you sent me to school, right? You know I'm educated. You know I have reasoning skills, right? I've already done all of that. None of it worked. You think I just up and left? You think I'm doing this because, you know, there's somewhere where they give awards for divorced people? You know, I'm going to sign up to collect my free money, like, yay! I'm now a member of the... No. I'm paying myself. I don't want to do this. I'm an ordained minister of my home church in Nigeria. I left for 1 year. I couldn't tell anybody I left. Because and this thing that they tell people, you know, like, why did she stay? She stayed because she said, I stayed because of my family. So I went back. But on the period where I went back, I built up myself to come to terms that my family and my faith community was going to turn their backs on me. Because I hadn't expected that. As far as I knew, they knew that I was a very reasonable person. And I expected them to know that this was the next logical conclusion. So I prepared myself. And the second time that I left, I was like, okay, she won't put the disclaimer on CNN or on Al Jazeera because, you know, like, now's a good time to go ahead. I'm not going back this time. So that was part of it. Then the second part of it was when I left, I went to do my doctoral program. And, you know, I was going with it, like, and I decided I was working in the field of HIV/AIDS, but my experience and the way everybody reacted, not really understanding what I was doing, because I was a victim of psychological abuse. It's like, police never came, nobody saw me with bruises, you know. So everybody's like totally clueless, you know, like, what are you talking about? Yet, after I left my marriage, I started to become active in the church. And people are like, I'm like, do you think I just learned this in like 2 months? No, this is who I was. I had all of these abilities all along. It was in my best interest not to be able to do anything because my ex-husband was like, you can't do nothing. I'm like, I can't do anything. Yes, I can't do anything. You know, can you move? No, I can't move this chair. No. So it was in my best interest to be unproductive because it suited our profile. But when I started to study, you know, sometimes I sit to myself, I'm like, William, do you want to study something else for chance? You know, because I'm reading these articles and I've spent half the time crying. Because I'm like, people know these things? People know. People knew. People know. Researchers know that psychological abuse is a form of domestic violence. Researchers know that psychological abuse can hinder what you become in life. Researchers know that people who are domestic violence victims can end up committing suicide in the victim, even if the abuser is not there. Researchers know that people turn to drinking and drugs to cope with them. Like, they know all these things. So what were people looking at me strangely and I said psychological abuse? What are people looking at me like, no. You know, and that's why I say, so that's why I'm not working in the university, I'm not teaching in school, because I'm like, the community people, I didn't give you a whole bunch of data except at the beginning, because it's not about, we need to do, it's not the no. We already know the psychological, we already know that domestic violence doesn't work. If I had stayed in my marriage, I would never have gone back to school. I would never have gotten a doctorate degree. I have the potential. I would never have stood up. I tell my husband I'm going to give a presentation. Did I lose my mind? I'm going to tell him I'm going to stand and preach. Like, I know something that might be interesting to other people. Like, I wouldn't. I would not. I would still be married though. My pastor would probably still be happy. You know, like, yeah, they're still married. You know, but I'll just be there like, yes. And I'll be living in the United States of America. Not like I'm living in some third world country. I'll be living in the United States of America. But I'll still have a living below my potential. And that will happen when I want. Interestingly, when we talk about men preventing domestic balance, and I'll take you, is that nobody talked to my ex-husband when all of this was happening. It was like, you're going to be embarrassed, you're about to become divorced, you better fix it. I'm like, doesn't he become divorced too? Like, why is the onus of fixing on me? You know, if anybody had engaged him, they would have talked to him about modifying his behavior. And guess what? He didn't modify nothing.